I believe personally, just based off of my own experience, that the spirit world is very diverse and very complicated. And there are a number of different, I think there are infinite amounts of different kinds of spirits, whether they're shadow figures, whether they're your guides, whether they're angels, whether they're demons, or whether they're ghosts. They're just people that rank on the spectrum of good to bad. I think there's so much out there that we can't, that we don't have immediate access to. And that's really hard for us to understand because it's not quite within our realm. Sometimes it's within our realm, but we rarely ever have power over it.
The dead are always looking down on us, they say. While we are putting on our shoes or making a sandwich, they are looking down through the glass-bottom boats of heaven as they row themselves slowly through eternity. The American poet laureate Billy Collins wrote that. I've often thought something similar about the spirits of the dead. But what about those that never lived? That's right, listeners. This week, we're talking about demons. I'm Dory Peacock, and this is The Ghost Box.
Well, I used to work at this wellness center that was kind of all about esoteric healing, alternative healing and stuff like that. And so when I was working there, I was mostly doing energy work and things like that. And there were a lot of people who worked there that were practicing witchcraft and were doing a lot of kind of like alternative spiritual practices that I think kind of helped in opening that gate.
I was going to start by defining the word demon, but really, there's no clear definition. We in English-speaking and mostly Christian countries think of demons as evil spirits or horror movie monsters. But the word demon has been used as a sort of catch-all translation for words describing many different types of spirits in other languages. Colonialism, am I right? The ancient Greeks are partially to blame for this. They used the word daimon to describe any spirit that lived between heaven and earth. The Greek daimon was not quite god, not quite mortal, and traveled through the air, sometimes manipulating the flight of birds. That's why Greek soothsayers analyzed the flight paths of birds to tell the future. Daimons could be good, bad, or neutral. They could even be helpful. It was believed that daimons inspired artists and writers to create great works. The Romans had another word for this type of spirit, genius. Meanwhile, in Jewish tradition, you have the dibbuk, corrupted spirits of the dead that attach themselves to the living, and the Hebrew Gospels also contain references to the shadim, the word the Jewish people used to refer to gods worshipped by their invaders, also ruah tumah, or unclean spirits. I have no confidence in how I pronounced any of those words. When the Hebrew Gospels were translated into Greek, the word daimon was used as a translation for several of these spirits, and the Western conception of the demon began to take shape. The book of Revelation, also written in Greek, speaks of a war in heaven where Satan rebelled against God and was cast out of heaven into the earth with all his angels. These fallen angels are also referred to as demons in today's vernacular. I'm focusing on the Western concept of demons here because that's the tradition I'm familiar with. But just about every culture has a concept of spirits locked in a battle between good and evil. Both Christian and Eastern religions have a concept of beings who interfere with spiritual progress by tempting humans to sin. And both Eastern and Western folklore contain stories of human spirits corrupted after death. In some traditions, though, spirits are more morally neutral or chaotic. Their moral alignment changes with their goals. Interestingly, a lot of religious traditions also have a concept of commerce with demons, trades or pacts humans can make with spirits to achieve their own ends. The reason witchcraft was such a serious crime in early modern Europe was that it required commerce with demons and often worship of the devil, which was heresy against the Christian church. The tradition I grew up in, Mormonism, has a more humanistic view of demons. In fact, I don't really remember hearing the word demon thrown around a lot. We said things like bad spirit or evil spirit. The fallen angels of Revelation are interpreted by Mormons as human spirits that were denied the gift of a physical body as punishment for rebellion against God. They're angry because they don't get to do any of the physical things you and I get to do, and they hate free will, so they're out to tempt people to sin so they can prove free will was a bad idea. Mormons are more concerned with Satan's interference with spiritual progress than his penchant for spooky shenanigans. That said, shenanigans aren't off the table. Put a bunch of Mormon teens together around a campfire, and everyone has a story about their cousin's brother's friend who cast a demon out of a guy on their mission, or the time they saw a shadow figure run out of their house after their dad blessed it. We also tend to see any dabbling in the occult as likely to attract bad spirits, even if you don't mean to. Let's not forget, though, that there are still polytheist religions that don't see such a strong dichotomy in the spirit world. In modern paganism, good and evil are more blended in every spirit and every action, and the spirit world can be interacted with in a variety of ways, some of them morally neutral. They seem to take the same view of spiritual diversity that my friend Cosette described in the opening of this episode. Some pagans see spirits as having more spiritual or more earthly desires and leanings, some more spiritually free and some more earthbound, you might say. Ghost hunters have adopted the morally neutral term inhuman spirits to describe any spirits who never had a mortal life as humans. And that's it. Thank you for coming to my demon symposium. So, the story you're about to hear is one that appears to me at least a little demonic, but could be read through the pagan lens of a more chaotic, though frightening, spirit. The story is, to me, one of the scariest I've recorded, so if you're listening with the kids, that's on you. It's about my friend Cosette. Cosette moved to Utah from California a few years ago and got a job doing Reiki healing at a wellness center. Before this, Cosette had no spiritual, supernatural experiences.
People would talk about all the time. We had sensory deprivation tanks at the property, and people would talk about seeing wet footprints after closing when everybody was gone. And there were all kinds of little spooky stories that everyone had, you know, their own. I think the first time I really had an interaction with a spirit there was this one day. I was just finishing up a energy healing session with a client. I had walked them out and I'd come back in to sanitize the room. And as I was standing there sanitizing the table that they lay on, I was looking at the wall and there were oily handprints at like the very top of the wall and on the ceilings. And there are a lot of massage therapists there, so obviously there's going to be some oil. But I was thinking, how did those get there? And right as I started thinking that, something grabbed my leg with both hands, and I screamed and I turned around and nothing was there, and I ran out and I ran to front desk, and the front desk was like, what happened? And I was like, I don't want to talk about it, nothing happened. And they said, no, tell us what happened. And so I told them what happened, and apparently at the same general time that this happened with me, they had seen a shadow figure move in the back room where there was no one but them. It was just these two girls that were working there and me, and they saw a shadow figure come out of the back room and move down the hallway. And then a few minutes later, or a few seconds later, I screamed. Well, kind of following that, I would get in my car and be driving, and I would feel like someone was watching me and someone was with me in the back seat. And sometimes I would look back there and I would see a woman. It started out slow. And it was kind of like I saw something out of the corner of my eye and I would look back and it would be gone. You know, something that happens to a lot of people every day. And then it started sticking around slowly after that. And I got really scared that there was something wrong with me. And I talked to several different psychiatrists to see if I was schizophrenic. I did a lot of tests and they were like, I can't tell you that you're seeing ghosts, but you're definitely not schizophrenic. And so, you know, as I was having this experience, kind of thinking I was crazy, she just stuck around more and more and became clearer and clearer through this 9-month period. And it got to the point where I recognized her energy, even if we weren't in the car. And the shadow figure that the women at my work had seen that day that I got grabbed was a dark woman. And I don't mean dark as in like some sort of ethnic background. I mean like a dark spirit.
Like there was something sort of not quite good about her.
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, I've had a lot of different kinds of experiences with different kinds of spirits. And sometimes I know that they're angels, and sometimes I know that they're just good people, or sometimes they just feel like a presence. But that was one that I really felt was dark. There was this time when I was working there, I got super into like astral projection, and I got super into astral projection, and I also got super, super into transcendental meditation. And I felt like those two practices together got me to this point that made me very, it developed a certain set of skills that allowed me to access different parts of my brain and different parts of my being that I was usually not aware of. So I think I became more in tune with my soul and the soul dimension. And so one of these times I was at my work, but I was there to do, I wasn't there to work. I was just at the building and I was going to do sensory deprivation therapy and go into a meditation. So I had secured the pod, the sensory deprivation pod, for 2 hours so I could do it. And so, I mean, I'm a very weird person. My spirituality is very weird. I've had a lot of weird experiences. So while I was meditating, I was having this experience where, and a lot of people who meditate have this, or practice yoga. When you close your eyes and you're in a meditative state, sometimes you see colors. And what people believe it is you see the color of the chakra that's healing. So when I would close my eyes and start to meditate, I would start to see these colors, and then I would try to go into the colors. And one of these times I was going into the colors and I was moving out of my physical body and into kind of my spirit self or my astral body, whatever you want to believe it is. And I started going into it until it was like this tunnel, and then it was black. And then I was in this blackness that was like I was unconscious. Like the blackness was over my whole mind. And it was just like it wasn't like I was asleep, but it was like I was dead. It was like dead time. And then I was inside of my, like, I was just feeling outside of my body and in myself. I got like this warning that was like, and I got very scared all of a sudden. And I came back into my body and I opened my eyes and everything was dark, of course. And I pushed open the pod and I got out and my heart was beating. And I was like, weird, that was a different experience. And I had been in there for about 75 minutes, something like that. So I got out, I got dressed, I got back in my car. And that was the first time I started moving and I felt the presence again. And this time was the first time that I saw like really like a defined person. Like it wasn't just like a shadow figure or something out of the corner of my eye. I saw her and she was with me. And that's one of the more clear memories that I have of it. And sometimes when I looked up and saw her, she'd be gone in an instance. And sometimes she would be there and I would have to cast out, which is when you use light to banish a spirit, when you command it to leave using whatever whatever it is that you believe in that's good, whether it's God or the universe or light or whatever it is, or Christ. And so I would, you know, tell it in the name of Christ to leave, and it would. I think she was at the wellness center, that she would be with me at work and then follow me into my car, and then somewhere along the drive she would leave. I don't know if she had some sort of like radius, like where she just hung around the center, but it was like, you know, either when I noticed her and cast out or I was driving, we would get to a certain point and she wouldn't follow me to Salt Lake. And then when I was working there, little things would happen, like, you know, you'd hear somebody kind of say your name and no one would be there. It was just a lot of little things like that. But while I was working there, I started to experience a lot of stuff at home. And do you want to hear about that? Because I think, yeah. I think working there opened a portal, and then I think something came with me to my house.
The concept of being followed by a spirit is one I come across a lot. To me, it sounds similar to the way a dibbuk attaches to a person. In fact, the word dibbuk means attach or adhere to. This spirit definitely sounds dibbuk-like to me. The lady in the car may have disappeared, but the paranormal activity Cosette experienced wasn't limited to the healing center.
Things started happening at my house when my roommate came home one day and she was like, I have something weird that I want to talk about. And I was like, okay, I'm always game for that. And she was like, okay, so I was at my boyfriend's house, Chad's house, and we had gone to bed and I fell asleep. And then I woke up to him just sitting upright, staring into the darkness, speaking in tongues. And she said he just sat there and was like, you know, babbling incoherent nonsense. And she was like, Chad, Chad. And he didn't answer her. He didn't look at her. He didn't show any sign of hearing her. And he did that for, you know, some time. And then he said, in the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to leave. And the weird part about this is that he's not a Christian. He doesn't believe in Christ, and he has no memory of ever saying that. So when he said that, he stopped and he laid back in bed, and she told me that she wouldn't look in that side of the room because she was sure that there was something there and she didn't want to see it. So when she talked to him about it in the morning, he said that he remembered not saying anything, not saying a word, not speaking in tongues, but all he remembered was seeing.
There was a glitch in the call here, so the recording didn't pick up what he saw. If I remember right, though, I believe what he saw was something like a black mist or shadow that grew and grew.
It felt bigger and bigger, and then it kind of turned into these two red eyes. And then it turned into a demon, and he could feel himself sinking in the bed down to hell. And he knew that, like, this demon was trying to take him to hell. And then that's the end of his memory. That's all he remembers. So she comes home and she tells me the story, and I was like, that's crazy. And I didn't believe her. But then, you know, a couple days go by and she comes back to me and she says, another weird thing happened. And I was like, what? And she told me that she had had this dream where our other roommate, Leah, was in it, who was a really close friend of hers, and Chad was in it. And they were both just kind of like emotionally and verbally abusing her. And she didn't know why it was happening. And she was scared. And then she realized that it wasn't them, and that there was something inside their bodies that was bad. And she was trying to get out of the dream and she couldn't. It kept getting scarier and scarier. And then she woke up and there was something over her bed, and she said she couldn't describe it. And she said it wasn't sleep paralysis. She could move, she could speak. And that after a few seconds, it dissipated and she got up and she, you know, took a shower, tried to wake up for the day because it was about 5 a.m. So she tells me the story and I was like, that's crazy. And then I move on with my life and I don't think about it. And then that night I was in bed and I fell asleep and I had this dream, and it was a normal dream for me. I have weird dreams. So I was going to school in the countryside and I was sitting in a tractor for my lunch, just eating my lunch. And then this man with like dreadlocks wearing like one of those like tie-dye shirts that has like a picture of like Bob Marley that's also a wolf. You know what I'm talking about? He's wearing one of those shirts.
Yeah.
And he's got dreadlocks. He's a white dude. You know who I'm talking about. So
yeah, he's one of those white dudes.
He's one of those white dudes. So he just comes up to me and he sits in the tractor next to me and he starts talking in like tongues, essentially. Like he's just saying things that I don't understand, some Latin roots in it, but just mainly nonsense. And then he looks at me and I get this thought in my head where I'm like, I know he's going to rape me. And so at this point I'm trying to get away and he's grabbing me and he's like trying to talk to me, and he's like getting closer and closer and pulling me, and I'm trying to fight him off. And then I wake up and over my bed is like this unfurling geometric shape that's kind of like, it was like a tesseract to me. Like it was something that I was seeing that I could not make sense of because it was like from a different dimension. And I have seen a few of these since then, but this was the first time, and I could just feel terror through my whole body. And I genuinely believe that it was an evil spirit that was manifesting itself to me. So after a few seconds, it goes away. It felt like a very, very long time. And I immediately texted a friend from church that I wanted a blessing. I wanted him to like say a special prayer over me, and that I wanted him to dedicate my house, which basically means he's just saying a special prayer that kind of seals the house as a good place. And it was like, I don't know, probably 4 a.m. And I got up and I went about my day because I didn't want to deal with that again. So, you know, he comes over that weekend, he says the special prayer, he's, you know, and I didn't find out until much later that from a friend who was there with us while he dedicated that house and gave me a blessing, our other friend that was there had told me that, and I didn't tell them what happened. I just told them that I was scared and I felt like there was a bad presence in the house. And so our mutual friend told me that the man who had prayed over me in my house had gone home and had basically the exact same experience, but with a different dream. which I think is crazy. I mean, it was something that was linking us together, and it was like this really weird, bizarre experience. And all through this time, there were a lot of things that were happening in our home where it didn't come after me like that again, where I saw it, but in the middle of the night, we would all hear someone running up and down the stairs in the hallway, just super fast, like crazy, crazy fast. And we would get up and there would be no one there. And it got to a point where we just didn't even get up. We all knew what it was. In fact, right when it started to happen at my house, me and my friend, we were at her house and we had just started hanging out, and it was Halloween night. And we had been to this really weird party and we left early because it sucked. And we were at her house. She's a very spiritual woman. And there was a moment, I hadn't told her anything that was going on with me, because I don't want to seem insane to those around me. And I know that the experiences that I have sometimes seem that way. But anyway, we were sitting on this couch and she looked at me. She's like, "Can I say something to you?" And I was like, "Yeah, of course. Like, you can tell me anything." And she was like, "I feel like there's a spirit here and it wants you. It's here for you. It's coming after you, and it's not a good thing." And I was like, I didn't really know how to respond to that because I didn't know her super well. But I was having these experiences and I was like, okay, weird. So I mean, this was something that was following me into all areas of my life, and those that were sensitive around me could tell. And then I went to a good friend of mine. She's a medicine woman. She's like a sacred healing woman, a Lakota healing woman. And she also does energy work. And she's like in her 60s, but we're good friends. And so I went to her because of just some things I was dealing with emotionally. And I wasn't even there for, you know, dealing with this weird spirit that seemed to be following me from, you know, whether it was Katie and Robert's house or the wellness center. I don't know where it started, but it was following me and it was kind of becoming a part of my life in all the different areas of my life. It was just sinking in. So I get to this healer woman, my friend Kim, and we have this energy healing session. It's pretty normal, pretty standard energy healing stuff. But at the end of it, she's like, "Hey, I want to like talk to you and kind of break it down what happened." And I was like, "Okay." And she was like, "While I was working on you, sometimes when you're doing this kind of work, spirits will become present." So Kim is talking to me and she was like, "So during the session, a spirit became present and he said he wanted to help." And I said, "You can help, but you have to stay outside of her body and you have to stay outside of my body." And he said, "No, I want to be inside of her body." And she said, "Nope." And she cast him out. And after that, after she cast out, she's a very, very powerful spiritual individual. I stopped having those kinds of experiences where it felt like, you know, where I was, there was something that was after me for a long time, maybe several things. Maybe it was the kind of work I was doing. Maybe it was the culmination of all these different variables coming into place. But for like this really bizarre 9-month period of my life, I had all these very weird experiences. And then it came to this point where I had this really, I went to this energy healing appointment that I really needed. I had a breakthrough. It was great. It was good, but it was nothing out of the ordinary. And then after that, I have not had that sort of experience again.
I'm left wondering if the woman who followed Cosette from the wellness center and the thing that occupied her house are related. And if there are dark spirits and malevolent presences, demons even, How do we draw them? Can we repel them? Are there things we do that bring them closer or drive them further from ourselves? Or do they drift around independent of us, like the dead in Billy Collins' poem? For my part, I always observe this mantra. Don't screw with the occult. But Cosette isn't about to be frightened away from her spiritual practices by a few demons.
So through my time being a very spiritual person, and kind of trying to meet my edges spiritually, I've encountered a lot of different kinds of spirits. And during this period of time where I was mostly doing energy work, I started being close to kind of the more ghost-like spirits. And now I'm at a point in my life where I'm, you know, practicing traditional folk magic and witchcraft a little bit. And these are practices where you call upon spirits and you call upon your guides, but it's a very different experience than just bumping into a ghost or having someone follow you, having a parasite. I do see sometimes shadow figures at work, and I do interact with spirits that I call upon to do my spiritual practices, but I haven't had like spooky ghost stories. I haven't had a spooky ghost experience since that time.
Listening, The Ghost Box is written, produced, hosted, and all the stuff by me, Dory Peacock, with scoring and mixing by Parker B. Aubeg, and help from our furry four-legged production assistant, George Moosington Adams, Esquire, because of course my cat is a lawyer. I want to thank Cosette for sharing her story for this episode. Also, Cosette told me another story that didn't exactly fit with the demon theme, but it's a really good one, so it will be available for my patrons on Patreon. What is Patreon, you ask? I will tell you. Patreon is this nifty website where you can make small monthly donations to support small independent creators like yours truly. And in exchange, you receive exclusive access to radical bonus content. Patrons of the Ghost Box have access to bonus stories from episodes, early releases, and soon our first ever Q&A stream. Yay! Mark your calendars. Tuesday, February 1st, I will be hosting a Q&A Twitch stream for Patreon patrons. No time yet. It'll probably be in the evening. I haven't fully worked out the logistics of this, so make sure if you're a patron that you're getting emails from Patreon so you'll know when I've posted a link for the stream. It should be fun. So, if you'd like to toss a coin in the box, as we say, and get that sweet, sweet bonus content, and join our fun Q&A livestream, head over to patreon.com/theghostbox and choose the donation level that suits your financial needs. Also, if you have a story that you think is right for the show, email us at theghostboxpod@gmail.com or slide into our DMs on Instagram and Twitter at theghostboxpod. You can also call us at 801-410-4315. That's 801-410-4315. Whether you call or write, give us a short description of your story and your contact info, and if we think it's right for the show, we'll get back to you. Finally, if you like the show, please rate and review on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. It helps people find the show. And if you didn't like it, well, maybe it's time for you to take a step back. Maybe get in a sensory deprivation tank and just really evaluate the color of your chakra, Jeff. Thanks for listening. Stay spooky, everybody.